I'm Chris Greenspun, and you're listening to SGV Weekly, the only podcast with your fix of the 626. This week, we're at the intersection of food insecurity and a neglected community.
There are a lot of Asians in the SGV who aren't well-to-do. They work in sweatshops, and they don't make much money.
We're joined by Christine Tran from South El Monte. She fights for food justice with the Los Angeles Food Policy Council.
Their organization is like the Rolodex of food systems.
They help out corner stores and food banks to fill the gap for people whose struggles are going unheard.
The solutions to even policy are in the mundane. And I think the things that people may find not interesting maybe is the solution that we're all looking for.
Valley Boulevard feeds so many. But who feeds Valley Boulevard? That story coming up on SGV Weekly. Now for some local news. First, I want to tell you about a Tribune investigation into the city of industry. Jason Henry reports that the owner of trash collector Valley Vista Services, David Perez, the former mayor of industry, hatched a plot to replace members of the city council who opposed the plan to build a $20 million solar farm on city property. A former state senator, Frank Hill, and a developer, William Barkett, two guys without meaningful experience in solar, got in good with Perez while he was still mayor, but after 2012, industry's city manager and city attorney looked into the two guys and decided they were sketchy. In 2015, after a secret meeting at Valley Vista, a new solar-friendly council was brought in, and the anti-solar people were voted out. Remember, industry only has a few hundred voters, and many of them owe their low rent to powerful people in town. The new council awarded the solar project to the state senator and developer in a no-bid process. Hill, the state senator, started to wield unofficial powers in the city, according to interviews with several of the council members at the time. Why does it all matter? Because that solar project never actually happened, and that $20 million came out of your taxes. Read the rest of Jason Henry's two-part special report in the Tribune. And here's one more from the Tribune. To meet the pilot and aerospace worker shortage, Mount SAC is teaching classes at Ontario Airport. Half of all licensed pilots in the U.S. are within 15 years of retirement age, according to the FAA. But they're not just teaching people how to fly planes. There's terminal and ramp ops, airport firefighters, mechanic work, and air traffic controllers. Mount SAC's chairman of aeronautics says these are all very good paying jobs. When SGV Weekly returns, we look at food insecurity and myths about the AAPI community.
Not all Asians are rich, and these stereotypes also feed into a lot of the hate crime that we've been seeing as of late, especially towards the elderly.
Support for SGV Weekly comes from
Dr. Rubin's Pomade. Made in Alhambra with a secret recipe since World War II that nourishes your hair with natural ingredients. It comes in flavors like melon, chocolate, and cherry, but please don't eat it. Try their lip balm instead. It lasts for hours. Get yours at drrubenspomade.com and use promo code SGVWeekly at checkout for 15% off. That's drrubenspomade.com.
And John Raby, the world's tallest man.
SGV Weekly, Boom California, and the Daw Center for the Arts present Writing Home, an evening with Pomona writers. Acclaimed poet Michael Torres will be there reading poems about P-Town. Jose Vadi will have essays about the whole goddamn state. And Romeo Guzman will be reading about soccer and playing soccer indoors, recklessly. It goes down Sunday, June 12 from 1:30 to 4 at the Daw Center for the Arts in downtown Pomona for free. But hit us up on Insta to RSVP your kids into workshops on poetry, zines, and button making.
Now back to the show.
I'm Chris Greenspun. It's SGV Weekly. Our guest is Christine Tran, executive director of the nonprofit Los Angeles Food Policy Council. In a nutshell, they exist to bring healthy food to neighborhoods that need it. But Tran's also a writer documenting Asian American life. She grew up in the first wave of Vietnamese settlement in South El Monte. The poverty that families like hers have struggled through is a story that hasn't been told very loudly, but she's telling it now. So in order to talk about food justice in the SGV, Tran will walk us through multiple subjects. We'll look at Asian migration, how different cultures in the valley live side by side, and how to change the food system for our mutual survival. Let's begin with the Tran family saga.
My parents came to the United States from Vietnam. They came as boat people refugees in the late 70s, early 80s. Various family members of mine started to escape Vietnam due to political oppression. And my parents actually escaped on a boat and floated in the Pacific Ocean for 3 days and three nights before they hit land. And they ended up in Malaysia. And longer story, but their boat was attacked by pirates at some point. And once my parents were able to get to the United States, it was difficult to find jobs. They didn't fit into the economy at all. And so they sort of found themselves working as sweatshop laborers, just trying to find ways to make ends meet. And my dad's first job in the United States was actually painting houses for $20 a day. And my mom worked in sweatshops for most of her life in the United States. For every sleeve or hem that she made in a shirt, she got paid pennies for. Back then, it was all the craze to wear shoulder pads. And so my mom made actually a lot of shoulder pads. I was raised on shoulder pads. And even as a kid, I actually helped out the family quite a bit growing up. It was like chores for me where my mom would sew sashes for girls' dresses. And I would watch cartoons and turn them inside out for the dressmaker to put on the dresses.
The Disappearing Burgers with Ronald McDonald and Friends.
Wow, Hamburglar has a magic kit.
They were the first Asians on the block, but their Latino neighbors helped them get by.
The first tamale I ever had was from our neighbor across the way. She was probably about 80 when I met her, and she would hand sew these beautiful dresses. And my sister and I got a couple dresses, and when it was time to dance La Cucaracha during an assembly, we were like the very few kids that actually wore a Mexican dress. And even I actually remember I had a friend who said, "Oh, I could have worn my dress." And so it was just a really interesting cultural exchange by having folks around me just take care of me as a kid growing up. And they didn't treat me as an other. And it was more of having that community feel and having the grandma down the block take care of me as if I was her own.
But not everyone was that sweet. Someone called her Chinese sushi. She didn't even know what sushi was. But she doesn't know too much about her own culture either, sadly. The Trans are Tu Chau, which is a group that started in Guangdong province and spread to other places like Thailand, Singapore, and Vietnam. Besides Tu Chau food that lives on in those cuisines, a lot of their history is lost.
There's so much about being Tu Chau that I love, but also it's part of my identity that is most a mystery to me, because there's not a whole lot of books written about Tu Chau people and culture, especially in English. And for me, I feel like because there's so many competing cultures out there, and especially being Asian American, I feel that my Tu Chau identity is fading a bit, and that makes me nervous.
Maybe that erasure is what drives Tran to write about Asian Pacific Islander diaspora. She's been published on PBS, KCET, and Boom, and there's a need for that kind of writing, even in the 626, where a lot of us are still ignorant about Asia.
So there's about 500,000 Asian Americans who live in the San Gabriel Valley, and it's the largest population of Asians compared to cities like LA, Chicago, and San Francisco. And there's such a diversity amongst Asian Americans that a lot of people just don't realize. And I think the SGV can be seen as a monolithic region for a monolithic culture. But when you disaggregate the SGV population and our histories, it's so diverse. And out of the 500,000 API folks who live in the SGV, we have Bangladeshi, we have South Asians who may not be part of an identity that they see themselves when they go to Monterey Park, but they're there. And that's a population that no one ever talks about. In addition to the Hmong people, that's another population that is primarily stateless. And a lot of people don't know that they exist as well. And I think there's so much about our API populations that between each other, we don't know about, and also non-API folks. What do they know about API community and histories. And so I think that there is just a challenge with connecting the dots when people don't actually know who their neighbors are.
And that means learning who they are beyond generalized stereotypes. Like the trans, they weren't well off, they lived hand to mouth. And food assistance from CalFresh wasn't more helpful to them than anyone else. Though I want to clarify, the rule she's talking about here is no longer in place, but it affected her family very much in the 90s.
One of the rules in CalFresh is that you can't have, let's say, a second car because it counts as an asset. So in my own family, when we were getting CalFresh, we struggled because one of the cars that my parents was using, it just broke down all the time. And so they decided to save up all of their money to buy a new car that didn't need repair. And that counted as a second car for my family. And automatically overnight, we lost our CalFresh benefits.
Now Trans Organization has done a study to prove that CalFresh needs to be easier to apply for. They talked to 400 people who've tried to sign up for it. The study found language barriers, shaming, and complicated applications get in the way, especially for people who are already struggling. And so hundreds of thousands of eligible residents in LA County don't get CalFresh, leaving hundreds of millions of dollars on the table. So the government has room to improve its understanding of who needs help. But then again, we all do.
Everyone eats, so we all have a role in the food chain.
Just look at the restaurant economy on Valley Boulevard. It's a foodie destination now, but that doesn't mean living conditions have improved much for the immigrant workers who make the SGV the best place to get a meal in Southern California.
It's also known for cheap eats. And there's a mixed message behind that because within an inter-community context, when you have restaurants that are feeding working class people, it has to be affordable. But then there's this level of social media and exploitation of like, enjoy this meal for less than $5. But then the question comes to be, you know, how did it become $5? And who's paying for this food at $5? And can they pay more for it?
That's why she fights with the LA Food Policy Council to get produce into corner stores around the county. It's their signature program.
Our dream through that program is to provide fresh fruits and vegetables within half a mile walking distance in what folks call food deserts or areas that don't have access to proper fruits and vegetables.
Of course, there are corner stores and meat markets that have healthy food for relatively cheap. But for the most part, we're surrounded by junk food.
Doritos is dropping flaming hot. Whoa, I'ma need a minute.
Hot Cheetos is an icon for a lot of low-income communities, the SGV, South LA, East LA. I myself, you know, am conditioned to like it too. So it's one of those things where we have certain flavor profiles that we gravitate towards over time. And with the capitalistic industries of the chip companies and soda companies, it's really easy to go in and celebrate those things. And there's just a really complex relationship when it comes to consumerism and what's available in the stores. A lot of the stores receive incentives from a lot of these companies. You can have a bread company or a beer company come in and say, we'll give you these beautiful new shelves, and they'll have their logo and branding all over them. And it's a way to actually take into consideration low-income folk and advertisements. And it's hard for a small business owner to say no to some of these things because it sounds like a good business transaction. But ultimately, what it does is it perpetuates poor health outcomes.
And it makes it harder for store owners to stock fruits and vegetables.
Like the way you store leafy greens is going to be different than how you store, let's say, potatoes. So there's a learning curve that is required to actually expand your business in that way. And so it's not worth it for a lot of produce vendors to sell so small to corner stores or liquor stores. And so that supply chain is very weak right now. And to incentivize a small business owner to take a risk in buying fresh produce to have in the store, the consumer needs to want it. And in order to get the consumer to want it, there has to be some behavioral changes.
Tran says some corner stores resell produce for very little profit to have that positive effect in their community. But to make that happen more is a two-way street. and most of us have no idea where our food comes from to even ask for it. But Tran says the answer could be closer than we think.
A place like SGV is really interesting because there's a lot of urban farms that exist. Nancy's Organic is an example. She's out in Roland Heights. And so I think when we connect those dots, the SGV is a perfect example of how it's its own ecosystem. When we think about where food comes from, historically speaking, the SGV was agricultural. Rosemead used to have rose farms, walnut used to have walnut groves, and it's an agricultural history that's been lost over time. But there are a lot of folks who still grow food, and they can actually grow food to scale to actually serve our populations in different ways too. But we have to broker those conversations, and those don't happen overnight.
Perhaps eventually people can take the power back and provide something for themselves that's been systematically taken away. But it's a solution to food insecurity in the mundane, like she said, that we can only find if we get to know our neighbors in the valley more. Christine Tran is the executive director of the LA Food Policy Council, and we'll have links to her writing, as well as her food justice work, at sgvweekly.com. That's another week. Our theme song is Usually by the Gun Club, courtesy of Manifesto Records, but this time it was all ambient music from Kevin Greenspan. Our logo is by Felipe Flores and Rita Greenspan. I'm Chris Greenspan. This is SGV Weekly.